All right, here we are.
Welcome to the inaugural episode of Civil Storm.
Civil Storm.
A political talk show with me, Brandon, and my friend Patrick.
What's up, guys?
As your hosts. I guess we'll sort of be divided up into
two sides.
Yeah, the liberal intellectual and the sort of gun-hungry...
conservative.
Boy angry.
Redneck.
Women beating. Conservative.
Hey, yeah. Hey, I don't beat women.
Well, you know.
All right, well, you know, whatever. We'll stick with that.
But yeah, sticking with, like...
Let the record state, though, that I don't
beat. First topic. How do we stop those women? Right? Right?
Well, it is... There's a storm of vaginas out there, Brandon.
Vagina storm, yeah.
And it's heading towards, you know, the election. Because I wouldn't really say that it's just focused on... I mean, there's a lot of stories about how the Republican Party is having a lot of issues with women.
And believe me, I'm a big fan of this because, sure, it's great. It's fun to watch these political fights. But isn't it even more fun when you add a cat fight into it? So now you have this woman, Hillary Rosen, and Ann Romney getting a little bit of a cat fight.
I mean,
I feel like, I mean, politically, but, you know.
Ann Romney was so offended by Hillary Rosen that she went to, of all places, she went to Twitter. And let her know. She let it rip on
Everybody
Twitter.
Went to Twitter. I think Michelle Obama was on Twitter being like, mm-mm, nuh-uh. That's what she said.
Right. I don't think so.
No. Snip, snap.
Yeah, with the snaps. But, I mean, honestly, this whole thing with Hillary Rosen and, you know, talking about how Ann Romney hasn't worked a day in her life, I mean, you can really...
Well, I'm sure nobody agrees with that, but it's funny that because this woman, who has no real affiliation with Obama, is somehow getting lumped in with her.
Well, you know, the thing that Republicans and, you know, especially now that Mitt Romney has been pushed to the forefront as, you know, pretty much the main
apparently candidate. All Republican opinions are now falling under him, and all Democrat opinions are falling under Obama, and that's sort of like what happens in a main campaign.
Well, I'll be honest with you, I didn't watch the clip with Hillary Rosen in it, and I don't even know. Apparently,
there's like 20 clips now.
She
just keeps coming on and keeps saying stupid shit.
Maybe she's doing it on purpose now. Do you think there's a behind this?
Yeah, there are types of people in this world whose egos won't allow them to be wrong. So instead of really apologizing, which I don't want her to do, she's giving these fake apologies, and then right at the end of it, like any annoying person does, they're like, oh yeah, I'm sorry, but... And then they sort of add on this whole thing, which is generally another attack.
Well, you know, I was reading an interesting article about this earlier today. From the Daily Caller, which as
a bastion of truth and
bastion
civility.
Of truth and civility, and it also happens to be, you know, a right wing site.
I tend to not read those too much, although I am a big fan of Fox News.
Well, you know, I do go on to CNN sometimes, but then I start feeling my fingers burn on the keyboard, so I have to navigate away.
CNN's
quickly.
A joke, no matter what. Like, you know.
Well, anyway. So you go, the triumph of political games, 7 reasons to reject what he quote-unquote calls Rosengate, which, by the way...
Everybody's been calling him, get that. Even, like, I've heard some Democrats say that. It's so
can
sad.
Can we get away from the gate, you know, add-ons?
Didn't,
the suffix, as it were?
Well, like, Clinton had a gate, too, didn't he? It was like,
Well, yeah,
Whitewater
it was Woman Gate.
Well, no. They gave it a stupid name. It was almost like...
You know, I honestly didn't know that Clinton had a gate.
Yeah, he had a gate. It was specifically with the Linda... Was it Linda?
I mean, honestly, yeah. There should really only be one gate, and that's Watergate. It was the Watergate Hotel.
Because it literally, that was
it
the name.
It literally was
there
the
was
name
no,
of the hotel.
There's no gate on any of his other things.
And so they started adding gate on anything, but it, you know,
we just
back... want
to remember the point in history where we finally lost faith in government, and that was with Watergate. So there you go.
That's, well, when we definitely lost faith in the president at that point.
And we put a little too much faith in media.
Yeah. Well, I think that's still the case.
Well, I think it started that though. That's when like the media like that. I mean, like investigative reporting's been around for a long time, but like it really like, I mean, like God, what was the movie that was even based on the whole Woodward and
All
Bernstein?
The President's Men?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really, really just moving sort of thing about how great the media is and how we're rescued from, you know, stupidity because they're the gatekeepers, and it was for a long time, and then it wasn't.
Now it's kind of just like, you know,
now it's every man for
everyone in their own corner.
Yeah, like the internet sort of made it like the Wild West for media. And
yeah,
I like that, but I hate it at the same time.
Did you see?
You have to do a lot more work to find the truth.
There was a clip a while back of Joe Scarborough talking. This was during the South
I love
Carolina.
Joe Scarborough. He's like one of the few conservatives I enjoy.
I don't agree with him a lot of time, but
he's
but
very he is, critical of his own party.
He's very critical of his own party, and he does have like when I agree with him, it's 100%. I'm with him.
Yeah.
But the other this was a while ago during the South Carolina primary. He was speaking, I believe at a school, like College of Charleston, I think. And he was talking about how media, like the internet, new media has changed the game for, you know, in terms of how everything is portrayed. Because, you know, you've gone past that 24-hour media news cycle now. Because now media can be interpreted by anyone who's a quote-unquote expert, like us, for example.
Well, yeah, I'm an expert on society. I like to call myself an urban poet. I've never lived in the city or anything, but I feel like I have that philosopher mentality.
I think it's the fedora. I think the fedora helps.
This is not a fedora. This is a Mowbray.
Oh.
It's Kangol, so I can feel, you know, my roots.
Oh, nice. Well, like, you know, I'm not a hat expert myself. Like, you know, like I said, there are a lot of people who tout themselves to be experts at the political arena, and really, it doesn't mean anything, because you can create a blog, or...
I think we might be doing that right now. We might be guilty of that.
We might be creating a blog that says we're experts.
Shut this show down.
Don't believe
now.
Us.
Fuck it. We'll do it live.
Well, this is, I mean, we're not really doing multiple takes of this, though.
No, we're not.
I think at this point, you know, if we make Tommy start over again, I mean, the only thing it's going to be good for is going to give him
Tommy's,
a chance to get
Tommy's our
beer.
Producer.
Yeah, Tommy's sitting over there on his computer, you know, chuckling at all the hilarious things that we're saying.
No, he's not. He's not. We're not really.
But... it's funny that we actually have a producer. It's the first episode of the show. Generally, you know, you hear people talk about producers, they're on actual radio.
So anyway, getting back to the women. And
yeah, so
and,
we'll
and
go
how,
back to this Hillary Rosen thing,
because
we totally
how,
took a left turn there.
So I would say both sides really fucked up. But the Democrats screwed it up less. And it's a little unfair, because the GOP sort of... took this whole stupid Democratic ploy to get them into a fight, and they ran with it, and they knew that they're going to lose, because whenever they try and talk too much about their social policies, they widen this gender gap, and it's every time this happens. McCain, it wasn't nearly as bad, but with
McCain,
with
Ron,
yeah,
you know,
and also he was campaigning a lot in the general election. A lot of people actually jumped behind him, but. It just so happens right now that Romney is unlucky enough to be in this situation where the gender gap is like slowly getting wider and wider for him, and he can't do anything about it, because it's not his fault. It's sort of like the party has to sort of adjust.
I think the Republican Party, when it comes to things like this, you know, quote that this woman had on,
the quote is only like a symptom of the whole the Republican legislatures in the state need to like pull back on. Maybe saying, hey, we don't want to vaginally rape women when they want abortions.
Here's where I depart from Republican kind of standpoints on things like abortion, because like I look at it more from a libertarian view, where is it really government's job to mandate whether abortion's illegal or not? I don't think that it is. If someone wants to go get an abortion, they disagree with them morally, but if that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do. Like, the only thing illegalizing abortion is really going to do is exactly what some Democratic strategists have said, and that's, you know, force people to either go into these quote unquote back alley like vacuum shops, or
and I don't want to act like some historian, because I'm definitely not like, you know, all that well versed in it, but it used to be, I mean, it used to not be a debate. It was Roe versus Wade, you know. And that was the end of it. And then, like, you know, you had people like Reagan come in, and he campaigned on pro-life positions because he was trying to court this religious faction that was sort of uncourtable for a while, because no real politician represented what they were trying to speak about. But when he started doing that, every Republican since then has run on a pro-life position, and it's just... I mean, it just hasn't helped them at all, because a lot of these bills, like personhood laws, are very, like, just invasive to women and their health concerns. It's just, and nobody wants to admit that.
Well, I mean, honestly, an abortion...
On the Republican side, I mean, the Democrats love to harp on it, but...
Well, I honestly, I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to...
But I think that's different. That's the young conservatives. Like, yeah, I think there's a difference in, like, maybe around 40 year and up for conservatives. They have a completely different view than, you know, the younger conservatives. And I met plenty of people with your same opinion.
Well, it's like this. When you look at, you know, an abortion and whether someone, you know, whether a person is, you know, at conception or not, that's a huge argument that, of course, has gone on for years now between the parties. Like, that should really also be on the person who's just trying to decide to have the abortion or not. Like, is the point where, you know, they feel like they're actually going to kill, like, a baby? Is that the point? This should all be left up to the individuals that are deciding whether to do that.
Or at least the state. Like, there should never be a federal mandate about these kinds of things.
No, and I think
I think that's sort of where, yeah, I mean, I differ with liberals in that I tend to be very federalist on a lot of these topics where I believe that states should make a lot of these decisions and courts shouldn't overturn a lot of those decisions either. I don't like the, you know, the whole idea of courts overturning decisions, even if I don't agree with the legislatures.
It's a shitstorm, honestly. Abortion is there's no winner when it comes. Well, I guess you could look at the Democrats and the left as being kind of
people,
the people
who end up with more liberty are the winners. That's how I see it. Yeah. And when you try and limit what somebody can do with their own body, you're limiting liberty.
It's very true. And honestly, that's what everyone should be concerned about here. I mean, when it comes to any of the different social or, you know, just legal fights that the parties have, and abortion just happens to be like the hot button issue that divides parties, and especially in this election, there's been a lot of talk.
Nobody's saying 300 term abortions where you murder like your 18 year old son or something.
That's probably
just called murder. Yeah, you're right.
It just, you know, it depends on the degree. You know, you could premeditate it, in which is like third degree, I think. But anyway, I think we talked about abortion, now I'm
sad. I made myself think about dead babies.
Let's talk about something happy, though.
Gun storm. Gun law shit.
Guns law?
Gun laws. Gun law storm.
A little bit lower. Oh, I see.
I don't know what he's trying to tell us.
I know what he's trying to tell me. I gotta move around less. But,
All right. So, yeah.
So, gun laws. Start off, Brandon, because I know that you had, like, an opinion on this earlier.
All right. My thing, and, you know, I grew up in Virginia. I understand the importance of the Second Amendment, blah, 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 blah. But, and I pretended to be on everybody's side, but really, I am all about gun control. And you might own a gun, you might not, but I think everybody should be in favor of limiting crazy people and idiots who get guns. And I mean, like, that shouldn't be something that we are afraid to argue. But it feels like, and this is really since Clinton was out of office, Democrats are just too scared to confront gun lobbyists. The NRA has just proven to be too powerful. And maybe not just the NRA, but like, because they don't even make a sound anymore. The Democrats just don't fight them. And there hasn't been, like, especially since Obama's been elected, there's been, like, no time. He's been completely standoffish about it, and it blows my mind.
Well, let's be honest. He had bigger fights that he wanted to win at the time.
He did. And he's also sort of doing this weird dance with gay marriage now where he's like, well, I came to office hating it, but now I'm slowly going to show that I'm a changed man. But I'm really, he was really always pro-gay marriage. Let's all be serious here. He was never against, he just has to pretend to sort of make all these motions until he can finally make it legal.
But that's a whole nother topic. I mean,
he's ignored it.
I mean, you talk about gun laws, and you talk about how there are people that are crazy, like you have, of course, Virginia Tech is being remembered on Monday.
And people are fighting for bringing guns on campuses. Like, why would you do that?
Well, here's the thing. If you look at the law in Virginia, because I have, it's actually legal, if you're legally allowed, to carry a gun onto a school campus. There's no state law that prohibits you from doing that. It's the school rules that prohibit you from doing that.
Right, and that's good. That's exactly how it should be. I agree with those schools that say that you shouldn't bring guns on.
I mean, I look at it this way. If let's say you have Virginia Tech or... I went to James Madison University here in Virginia.
Yeah.
Who says, we don't want guns on our campus. If you have someone who either A, doesn't care, or is B, looking to do harm, they're going to completely ignore that rule. They're not going to be like, oh, crap.
Yeah, but guess what? Before they even shoot somebody, somebody could see that they have a gun on campus and turn them in. Because it's already against the rules.
It is already against the rules, but at that point in time, is it too late? Like, you know, let's say the police show up. Is he going to shoot the cops? Like,
so do you want a shootout between students then?
No, I don't want a shootout between students. I think that if you're a student and you conceal carry on campus, like, that's fine. If you're breaking school rules and you're looking after your school, it, you know, now let me be frank here before I get into this kind of dangerous area, because if you carry a gun, you should not be looking to save other people's lives. The gun should be primarily for your defense. You're not a hero. Police are supposed to take care of that kind of thing. We as citizens, it's not our job to try and take down these threats because we're not crime experts.
Well, then,
you know?
Yeah, I mean, and that goes to the point of, like, why do some of these states have, hold your ground laws?
Well, I think that's
very counterintuitive to safety of people when you say that somebody can actually stand up to a gunman. Or somebody who's assaulting you.
Well, it's like obviously that.
Instead of immediately going to the police.
Like, if there's a stand your ground, if you're being a, you know, if you're someone with a knife or, you know, some kind of weapon is trying to attack you and, you know, you're forced to run away, like, when is the point where standing your ground is okay? Like, is it when you get tired or trip and fall and they come on you with the bat or whatever?
Every state has self-defense, like, you know, laws. You won't be, you'll be, in the worst case scenario, you'll be charged for manslaughter because you used a little too much force. But to have ones where it's like, yeah, you shouldn't even run, you should actually confront them, it's insane.
Well, it's not about confrontation, it's not about creating conflict, because anybody, if you, in the state of Virginia, you have to take a course on concealed carry in order to get your license, right?
Yeah.
Every course of the normal good ones, you should never take an online course for this kind of stuff, which I've heard is available, but every one of the good ones is going to say, don't. You want, the gun is your last resort. The gun should always be your last resort.
Do you agree with justifiable homicide then?
I think if someone's trying to kill me, then yeah, I have the right to defend myself.
I mean, I just happen to not believe in, I mean, I have a gun only for, like, you know, show. Like, to just have it in case, like, you know, there's ever a problem. But I don't think I would ever shoot anybody, even if I had to, like, draw it.
Yeah, and that's another, like, you know, that's another thing when you talk about concealed carry is, like, you should not conceal carry a gun if you're not sure if you're capable of doing, you know, protecting yourself or shooting somebody. Because then you have a gun on you, you're just creating a problem for yourself. If you're not fully prepared, you know, that's, you know, to use it. If you're not fully prepared to do something, you should not carry it.
I mean, I'm a complete pacifist, but, like, you know, I understand, like, the need for safety and things like that, and I've had some problems too with people where, man, I wish I had something, you know, to protect myself with in certain situations, and I didn't. But I mean, to suddenly just say that anybody can buy something to feel safe is just insane.
Well, getting back to that, when you talk about, like, well, crazy people can't buy guns or idiots, right? Where, like,
but there's no limit on it. I mean, like, there is no law against that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, let's say
there's a background check, and then in 10 minutes you have a gun.
Well, if you don't have any felonies,
yeah. But I mean, like, come on, like, a lot of these crimes are committed by people who have no priors.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about any statistics when it comes to gun violence, honestly, but you look at it like this.
America has a lot of it. Let's just, you know.
Oh, well, hey, yeah. I think when you look at death by vehicle versus death by gun, you're looking at a lot higher of a number there.
Well, we also drive more than any other country.
Well, here's
in the
thing about that.
We have an interstate system that, like, makes every other country look silly.
Well, every other country is a lot smaller than ours.
Right. But I mean, like, we put a ton of money into it. So, like, comparing those two statistics isn't really, like,
relevant. Well, I look at it like this. Like, when you're talking about cars and how a lot of people die on the roads here in the United States every year, like, you have
because
DUIs,
everybody owns a
right?
car.
Yep. DUIs, right? So you go to the bar, you have too many drinks. Let's say on this, you know, outing, you crash into, you know, another car or a building or something.
Yeah.
And you don't die, but you've caused some damage. The state comes and says, all right, you can't have your license for this long. Now, that's up to the state, obviously, but generally speaking, after a first offense, DUI people get their license back. Like, what is with that? If I...
Well, they get their license back after they go through, like...
Yeah, they have to go through courses.
They go through a year of AA, and they go through, like, this, you know, substance abuse, like, seminar crap.
Yeah, and let's say...
But I've known people who've gone through that, and then they've just immediately returned to being...
Yeah, and let's say, you know...
I agree that those programs don't work.
The same schmo goes back on, you know, goes back, gets drunk behind the wheel. This time he kills a couple of people walking across the street. You know, like, when it comes to gun laws, because firearms are such, you know, such a, they're volatile, man. You come to a point where if I violate any of the simplest gun laws, I can be denied my right to a firearm for the rest of my life. For, let's say, illegally, you know, putting my gun in my car in a certain place where I shouldn't have it.
Like, they, I think gun racks are now, like, illegal.
Gun racks are illegal. You at the end. Honestly, though, gun racks are...
Like, in the car? I never understood gun racks in the car. I thought that was weird.
I mean, if you're going to a hunt and you want to keep your gun in your car, like,
in the When I was a kid, you used to see, like, just shotguns, like, well, racked on the back of a pickup.
I'm from Georgia.
It's probably even more common there.
It's pretty common to see those.
I mean,
deer
hunting happens here a lot, but that's pretty much it. From, I mean, like, that happens every year that we can see.
Yeah, deer and turkey are the... Sorry. But you have,
no more pants rubbing. That's what it's
Yeah. I have a little bit of a problem, guys.
Listen, man, if you want to do that after the show, that's fine. Just not during. Rub your pants all you want.
But, you get back to, you know, let's say I put my gun in my front seat in a box and, you know, a cop notices it there, and he pulls me over for speeding or something. Like, and he says, okay, you can't do that. I'm going to have to arrest you on firearms violation.
And you're like, oh, thank God. I thought you were going to look at all the beer cans at my feet and arrest me for that. It's like, no, it's just the gun, right? I've seen that happen before.
It's degrees, man. It's degrees of things, you know. Are guns worse than beer? A lot of people would say yes.
The traffic cop does a little bit of a tic-tac-toe in his hand. He's like, gun cancels out beer. I'm just going to arrest him for beer. Or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
The opposite of that. Just the guns.
Anyway, there's like the line you have to walk when you own a firearm is very thin. Now, of course, there are people out there who are stupid and get themselves shot or lose their privileges. That's fine.
There was that Giants player who shot himself.
Plexico Burress
in the
club. He wasn't even supposed to have a gun. Is the best part.
I want there to be something called the Burress Law that keeps idiots from getting guns. That's what I want it to be called. That,
but
and I want it
thing,
to work.
When you talk about preventing idiots from getting guns, which I'm all for.
Yeah.
Like, where do you draw the line? What's an idiot? Like, how do you define an idiot? Do you have to take a test?
We have a panel of judges, and they do it. They do the plexiglass.
How are these
test.
Judges selected?
They're probably appointed, like any
they're
any
appointed,
good judge.
But what if they think that people who want to buy a gun are stupid or an idiot?
Then you don't get the gun.
Well, that's just completely
Guess
defeats
what?
The right of
you'll
carrying.
Have to you'll have to defend your family with a shiv you carve out of your toothbrush. That's the law that I envision.
Well, why
one
not?
Day.
Why a shiv carved out of my toothbrush?
Because I assume then you're with too a, stupid with... to have a knife or anything. I don't know.
Well, so what? Maybe we have laws preventing people from having kitchen knives?
Maybe you come at the person with like a katana or something. I don't know. I saw that on a Dig article one time.
A Dig article about katanas?
It was this nerdy kid who had a katana on his mantle, and a guy broke into his house, and the kid just shanked him with the katana, like, right through his chest. And the guy was, like, knocked unconscious just from the blood loss, and, like, the police came, and the kid was just like, yeah, I just stabbed him with my katana. It was badass. That's what I'm behind.
Well, you know, in high school, I did a martial art called kendo.
Oh, yeah? That's,
which
yes,
is,
a,
which
is
like
a Japanese one?
It's like Japanese fencing. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. I do remember that.
I did it for a few years, and I got pretty good, and then I was like, you know what? If I want to defend myself, why don't I just carry a fucking katana around the town with me? No one's going to want to mess with me if I have a katana.
I do remember those, actually. Is that one?
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I actually remember one time I was in some sort of practice match for kendo, and they have a neck guard. So I guess you're supposed to go for the neck for some points?
Well,
it's like this thing right over the neck.
Yeah, yeah. It's this little like, stiff piece of leather.
Yeah.
That's reinforced.
And I was, this was when I was in Japan, like, I did this with my host sister, and she went right for my neck, and it, like, knocked all the wind out of me. I was like, I thought it was supposed to guard me, but it didn't do anything, and I was, like, knocked over, and
well,
it was, like,
it's
one
not
hit.
It's not exactly going to stand up to, you know, the tip of the bamboo
it was like,
sword
like
going
a
in here.
Right into my neck.
Yeah, like,
really fucked
I don't
up.
Remember what the name of that particular move, part of the armor is, but that's,
I didn't
like,
know
one
anything
hard
about
things
that.
To go for, because you have to hit it right.
That was gym class. I never went back to that class.
Oh, I bet. I bet you were, you know, mortified that you would be attacked with the sword again.
I didn't do that, yeah. But, yeah, I mean, like, there are no sword laws, and there are no other...
Well,
I mean,
actually, that's not technically true. There are laws, especially in Virginia, about knives. Like, you can't carry a fixed blade that's longer than, like, 3 inches.
Yeah, and, well, that's on airplanes, I think. I think you can...
You can't carry knives on an airplane at all. What are you talking about?
Well, I thought there was something about length of blade makes it not a knife or something.
What did the 9/11 hijackers use?
I don't know, box cutters.
They used box cutters, which have like a 1-inch blade.
That's true. So yeah, that's not right. But, that's true. And then they started scanning shoes because you could hide like a tiny blade in the shoe.
Or, well, no, it was C4. The guy had C4 in his shoe.
No, but like you could also put metal in there.
Well, did you see there was a video that came out, I guess, a month ago?
Not metal, but you could put something. A sliver.
There's a video that came out, like, a month ago. The guy showed, like, that if you sew, like, a pocket into your shirt right here on your side, and you stand in the scanner, it won't see it because, like, objects that are suspicious come up as black against a white background.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to get off on a tangent, I find it hilarious when people show you how completely inept the TSA really is. They make us go through all this bullshit, and it turns out that they can't actually do anything.
Because, like, have you seen the quality people that the TSA are hiring?
Oh, it's sad. It's
speak English very well.
And they don't enjoy their jobs. Like, no, I don't think I've ever seen a happy TSA employee unless they're, like, just slacking and not actually doing their job.
Well, I mean, honestly, law enforcement people in general, unless you catch them on a break or something, aren't generally very happy people at their jobs.
But they're not dickish like the TSA generally is.
No, TSA is kind of like, oh, you looked at me the wrong way. I'm going to make you go through the body scan.
They really are above and beyond on the piece of shit scale of public workers.
Oh God, they're worse than the Postal Service, which keeps raising the price of stamps.
And I'm gonna say this right now: I actually haven't had a bad time at the DMV in years. Like they're doing it right. I don't know what it is, but
Virginia's got it right, man.
I registered a vote at the DMV. I get my license replaced when I need to, and I wait in line maybe at most half an hour, and I'm always pretty happy at the end.
Well, back in Georgia,
but I always bring a book. It's not like I'm bitching. Yeah,
The DMV in Georgia is exactly like the DMV. In all the stories, they hate their lives.
Yeah.
And they hate you too. But here in Virginia, when I moved here and finally went to get my license and my address changed and everything like that, like, not only do they try and prevent you from coming into the DMV because it might be easier for you to do something online, but when you go to the DMV, they have a very organized way of taking care of people. They have, like, the different letter things that they use.
I don't know how the hell they work. I wish it was in some sort of sense, because, like, they'll call out a letter, and it'll be A or something, and I'll have... it'll be like A11, and I'll have like B124, and it'll be like, all right. So once I get done with the A's, it'll be my turn, and it'll suddenly be like fucking G537, and I start to think like I really have no idea when I'm gonna get called. I there's no way for me to know.
Well, that's why,
when I'm close,
you can't,
because they've
in.
Done it this way.
You can't just walk into the DMV in Virginia. You have to go see the receptionist and tell them what
you
want.
And then you get the little
ticket thing, and then you wait for your...
And you get your paperwork, which is like, oh, this will keep me busy, and it keeps you busy for like 2 minutes. It's never.
And then you play Angry Birds.
Yeah, it's like the first side of it will be like all the normal stuff, and then the next like 20 pages will be like, have you ever committed a felony? Have you ever pushed a pregnant woman down the stairs? I'm like, no. It's like all this stuff. I don't need to. I never did any of this.
Well, the number one way to get yourself kicked out of a gun shop is to mark yes to the question, have you ever been convicted of domestic violence?
Yeah. Always say no, because they can't prove it. The bruises just...
Well, if
so
you
quickly.
Say no, they go through the FBI background check, and if there's a charge on your record, they're like, oh, it came back negative, you can't...
Now give me
gun.
My hollow tip, ammunition, so that I can go hunt some elephants in the middle of the D.C.
Listen, those elephants are protected, aren't they?
What?
They're at the zoo.
What I meant to say was they're buying that ammo to hunt
elephants.
Oh,
no, you're talking...
But they're really murdering congressmen.
Republican congressmen, yeah. They're murdering the elephant party.
Well, I don't know.
Listen, anyway... funny story about the gun shop is, this is a while back, I was in there, and this guy walks in, and he's...
Is it like a sitcom? Could there be a sitcom about just dudes hanging out in a gun shop?
No, I don't think there could.
There couldn't be? Oh, yeah.
No, because gun shop guys are pretty serious. But this guy walks in while I'm standing there, looking at the guns on the racks, and, he's looking a little sketchy, he's got kind of shabby looking clothes, and he's looking around everywhere.
Yeah.
And he walks right up next to me to the counter, and he goes to the guy I was talking to, and he says, hey, I'm a convicted felon, and I want to buy a shotgun. Can I do that? And the guy says, no. And he says...
Oh, shit, he almost got him, right? That's what everyone
and
was saying.
And he says, no. And the guy says, all right. And then walks out of the gun shop. And I just couldn't believe that I had heard that conversation.
It's the most nonchalant thing
I've
ever
heard.
To
the guy behind the counter, and I say, does that happen often? And he goes, more often than you think. And I say, are they usually that nice? And he goes, no, they're not that nice most of the time.
But what are you going to do, pull out a gun on the guy who owns the gun shop?
No, you don't do that. Because there's more than one guy in the gun shop generally, and they all have guns.
So you get questions like, hey, do you have any guns with the serial numbers filed off? Like, maybe not. I don't know.
No, I don't think.
You know, something that's really ready to be laundered.
How's it going, Sarah?
Hi.
Hey, Sarah. So, gun laws, those are funny. I think it's a weird argument.
Well, you can apply the slippery slope argument, and it could be valid.
I think that's why Republicans are afraid to give up anything on gun laws. They might agree that, hey, there should be more limits. There should be more of a wait period before you get a gun. Things like that. But,
well, I don't understand. You go through the FBI background check. Anything that's on your record would be there.
But I think a lot of Democrats or liberals in general think of it as like a crime of passion thing. You go into a gun shop maybe in a bad mood, looking to hurt somebody.
I think a wait period.
Maybe there should be a week long period where like I want this gun. They're like, oh yeah, sure. We'll hold it for you.
That, like New York.
And a week. There are states that do that. But I actually think that would be better off as like a federal thing, because if you implement a big program like that over every state, one, I don't know what gun runners couldn't do shit about that. Like
Straw purchases.
Yeah, the straw purchases, like, out in New Mexico and Arizona. I mean, like, I don't know if it would cut that down, but it would definitely slow it down.
Well, I mean, here's the thing with the straw purchases, is that there are a lot of reports, I mean, if you want to talk about Fast and Furious, which is a black hole of
That was a separate thing, though. Like, I'm talking, like, straw purchases, Fast and Furious was trying to solve straw purchases, but they really fucked up.
The actual problem is still a real problem.
Exactly. Like, the actual problem is still a definite problem that needs to be fixed, and, like, nobody's really coming up with any solutions.
All Republicans say is,
you can solve this problem as long as you don't limit how many guns I can buy every day.
Well, in the state of Virginia, they just got rid of that law that was created back in, like, 93 or something.
No automatics, yeah.
No. This is
a separate one?
In Virginia, it used to be you could only buy one handgun every 30 days. Now they got rid of that. Because they saw that it was, well, according to the news, it wasn't...
12 guns a year is still pretty good.
That's a lot of guns. Plus, you can buy as many rifles as you want.
That's already too many
guns.
Plus,
if you're a gun runner, you probably don't want handguns. You want rifles because you're sending them down to Mexico where you want a lot of heavy bullets to kill a lot of heavy, you know, innocent people.
Hey, that's God's war out there, all right?
It's not God's war.
It's God's war.
What are you talking about?
Well, I mean, they're just solving their own problems. Mexico style.
Well, what happens when the drug cartels take over Mexico? That's a problem for us, right?
Then we just have cheap drugs coming into America. I'm for that.
I'm not for that.
I mean, as long as no Americans get killed in the crossfire.
Okay, well, Eddie Izzard had a bit, you know, back in the early 2000s when his
comedy... still gave a damn and dressed like a lady.
Yeah, when his comedy was actually funny.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, Hitler, you know, murdered a lot of, you know, Jews in Germany, and then he went over to Poland and started killing people, and that's when things got out of hand. You know, when you kill your own people, the world pretty much is kind of like, eh.
It's true. I mean, it's true.
The world doesn't care. When you start killing another country's people, uh-oh, shit's gonna hit the fan.
I mean, and that would be true for the most part, but, like, whenever we weigh the pros and cons and see that we can definitely do something decent, I think the world usually responds. But it's only, like, after they've weighed the pros and cons and seen that it's not gonna be too hard on our pocketbooks if we liberate Libya. Let's go and do that.
Well, when you look at, like, even going back to the late 90s in Kosovo, when we got involved in that, which is pretty much a religious conflict, yeah, to get, you know, like...
have you heard, like, Bill Clinton talk about that? He said that's his biggest regret as president, is he didn't act sooner on that. Like, he says it's so embarrassing that he let that many people die. And, like, he really has it on his conscience. And I think that, like, I mean, like, and I think that, like, people like Obama didn't want that to happen. They didn't want that on their conscience. And it's unfortunate, because if we had the money, we would be in Syria right now. We would. Because it's even worse in Syria. We just don't have the money.
Like, I mean, we haven't had the money for the last, 10 years? More than that.
We've had a budgetary issue for a long time. It just turned out that Libya wasn't that expensive.
We weren't the only people in there as well.
Right, we had a coalition of people. And we could probably pull that together for Syria, too, but not gonna make a fucking difference.
Well, did you see the UN just went into Libya? The news came out on that today, I saw.
Oh, what is the UN doing now?
Well, they're just observing. You know, that's what the UN does.
Yeah.
Just like in Rwanda, you know. They go in and they watch, and a lot of people get killed.
Oh, speaking of, like, the Middle East, though, I actually saw there is some really prominent Islamist who is running for, I think, president of Egypt, because the elections just happened, I guess.
Are we talking, like, Muslim Brotherhood Islamists or separate?
He was even more to the right than them. And apparently he was tied to some American group a couple weeks ago, and he lost all credibility.
Oh, I'm shocked.
And so, like, it's funny. Like, this guy is very hardcore anti-America, death to Israel. Like, the Muslim Brotherhood isn't even that far. Like, they're basically just like, we don't really want to honor the treaty because we want more land. We don't want to honor these 67 borders. That's all they're saying. They don't say that they want to destroy Israel.
Well, let's be honest. When it comes to 67 borders, they kind of created that problem for themselves.
They did. And a lot of, and if you read a lot of great Israeli scholars on the subject, like, they say that the, you know, that territory will eventually, like, consume Israel. It will just be such a big problem politically.
What, Gaza?
And so, yeah, the Gaza Strip, like, everything past the green line, which is, like, the Palestinian border shit that they acquired after the Six-Day War with Egypt. It was going to ruin them, and it has. It's done exactly what, like, everybody said it would do. It's slowly just taken on a life of its own, and now it's the only thing people talk
honestly,
about politically
with
Israel.
Honestly, if Israel wants to give back, if Israel were to give back any of its land, you know, Gaza and the West Bank, I think, you know, okay, fine. But the Golan Heights, the reason that they shouldn't give up the Golan Heights is because they're so strategically important. They're such a high point within
it's
the country.
It's strategically important if you believe that you're going to be at war for the next, like, 30 years.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. They've been, you know, threatened for how long?
But it's basically this, like, you perceive this threat, and then it's never going to go away. And it's to the point now where a one-state solution isn't feasible, because if you ever did a one-state solution, the whole dream of Israel would be dead in, like, a month or two, because there's just too many Palestinians. It would no longer be an Israeli state. It would be a Palestinian state, because they'd have
to find another state.
Yeah,
they
would, in, like, I think they said in, like, a few years, if they tried to do that, Palestinians would outnumber Israelis by an insane amount.
Well, I think, you know, are a lot of Arabs in Israel right now, it is.
But they have to, like, go, it's horrifying, the stuff that they have to do. Like, they have to get all these stupid permits. A lot of them still don't have citizens' rights, even if they live in Israel. They can only go to a certain part of Jerusalem. It's so messed up, like, the stuff they have to go through. And I don't blame Israel in general. The ideas of Israel are still sound. It's just the government is so awful.
Well, I mean, and the government's gotten more conservative over the past few years as well.
And I don't think a conservative government means bad. I think it's the people like Netanyahu and the guys who have his ears, like Lieberman.
The Israel firsters?
They definitely have a racist agenda against Arabs. I mean, there's just no denying that. And then, two, they have no problem.
Well, didn't Netanyahu fight in the Six-Day War?
Yeah, well, you can't be a prime minister of Israel if you aren't in the army at some point.
Well, no, everyone in Israel is in the army
at
some point.
And everybody fights in some sort of war because Israel's always fighting.
But you look at it this way. Netanyahu was in the Six-Day War, I believe. Yeah. He might have been in the Yom Kippur War, but anyway.
No, I think he was in, yeah.
That gives him, I would say that war would probably give him a pretty good reason not to like Arab. Not that it's right, I'm not saying that it's right.
Because
there are
plenty of war heroes in Israel who are open to the whole idea of a two-state solution, which is, that's what I'm for. I think that's the only thing that makes sense.
Well, wasn't Ariel Sharon still in talks with that before he left the...
It's pretty much no-go right now. It just isn't, because after the Arab Spring, the whole situation is too toxic.
It's just such a...
Because right now, the Palestinians sort of have the ground to talk on the fact that their rights are being violated, because they are. And it's unfortunate, because Israel could have done so many things in the past, like, 60 years to not let this happen, and they made every wrong turn you could possibly make.
It's
too late now. I want to say it's too late. I don't know if it's completely too late to, like, find a solution, but it feels like it is.
I don't think it's too late. It's ever too late to find a solution. I mean, you know, you think about... You look at South Sudan, for example. Like, I'll admit, it's not perfect, because they're still being killed.
Yeah.
But
well, they're actually not, though. Like,
the Sudanese are killing their own people.
The North Sudanese have been just killing people on the border that are still their own people. They can't kill the South Sudanese
but
now
you,
because
you
have UN troops
everywhere.
You could
say that that's a solution to a situation that was untenable. It's
true. And the fact that that ended up working out does give me some hope. Because originally when I heard about, like, you know, a two-state solution, what I thought of was, oh, great, now there's going to be another enemy that's going to have a standing army that's going to be able to be poised against Israel. And that sounds like a terrible idea, because I still believe that Israel should exist. But I really believe that the Palestinians, like, they need to have every right available to them as a citizen of their own sovereign country. And it's... Right now, they're an occupied country. Or not an,
they're an occupied people.
They're an occupied people who have no country. And that's the fact that, like, America can call Israel an ally right now with those kind of human rights violations is insane.
Well, I mean, America's called a lot of people, you know, allies. That's true. Who have violated. Talking about Musharraf in Pakistan.
Musharraf. And the fact, we back Bahrain, who is... really terrible, and like we didn't realize how bad they were. It honestly, like, it looked like Dubai before the Arab Spring, and then the Arab Spring hit, and it turned out we didn't know shit about Bahrain. We didn't realize how bad it was. We thought it was like a tourist destination. When they found oil, they became like a big tourist place.
I mean, that's exactly what happened with Dubai and the United Arab Emirates, is that all these people in Oman, and less so Oman,
Qatar
definitely,
yeah. But, I mean, Qatar is slowly moving towards more democracy. I mean, that's how they – I don't think anybody would have given a dictatorship the World Cup.
Yeah, well, I mean, also, there was an interesting article about sports a while ago.
Not since Hitler. They wouldn't do that.
About sports a little while ago, talking about how, like, Formula One was in Bahrain earlier in the season, and how, like, the Bahrain, like, government spent so much money – to make it seem to the tourists and everyone who was coming in for Formula One
that there wasn't a war,
there wasn't
going
anything
on.
Wrong, you know, going on in the country. I mean, honestly, you know, if we want to talk,
that's
about
what China
war,
did for the Olympics. I mean, they always do that. So that's not surprising.
I was in China when they were planning for the Olympics, and you know, they talked about how
people still got murdered. Like, there was an American coach who got like stabbed or something during the Olympic games. Yeah,
I didn't hear about that. Honestly,
yeah, it was.
But it doesn't surprise me. I'm gonna stop there. But. Forget we're being recorded.
He got nunchucked right in the throat. He was dead.
Bruce Lee came back from the grave and killed him. But
is Bruce Lee Chinese?
Yeah, he was. He's from Hong Kong originally, I think. Just like Jackie Chan.
Oh, Jackie Chan's amazing.
Yeah, he is amazing. I wish his movies were amazing still.
Well, let's not talk about that. Make me cry. That's a topic that can make me cry.
Yeah, but I mean, talking about China during the Olympics. They talked about how China sent up all, you know, these, like, rockets into the sky to make the clouds go away so that it wouldn't be rainy during the Olympics. I don't know if that's true or not. I honestly can't say for sure. But when I was in Beijing, I was only there for a few weeks, I'll admit, during the summer leading up to the Olympics. They were still building the big bird cage.
Yeah.
I forget what they called it. But anyway, the bird's nest.
Yeah.
It was freaking hot in Beijing, and that alone made me believe that they were really sending up these rockets to clear away clouds. Because it was,
I mean, I've heard of that before, though. People, like, they do that at sporting events, even in America. I've heard of that kind of stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But it's
like something that
scale.
Sort of explodes in like the protosphere.
Well, it's
whatever,
these little
whatever
metal fragments that absorb water and go away, make it go away.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite part about that whole Chinese Olympics thing, I think it was in the opening ceremonies, but it might have been the closing ones. They had, like, all these children who were supposed to represent all the different ethnicities of China. There was, like, 100 children out there because there's, like, 100 different ethnicities.
Yeah.
And they're like, I'm this one. But, like, the majority of Chinese are Han, right?
Han Chinese, yeah.
Yeah. I think there was a story that came out, like, the day after that aired, that every single child in the audience, or in that thing, was Han. And,
well,
like,
that's not shocking to me.
They didn't find a single ethnic Chinese person. They just picked all the ones that were in Shanghai, I think.
Well, let's talk
and
about,
I was like, all right, I well, mean, you think you could... Couldn't you go to the north and find, like, all these hundreds of children you claim live here and show them? Like, because the Canadian did that thing where they had all the First Nationers, and they actually had real, like, Canadian Indians. Where, I don't know what they're called.
Inuits, probably?
Yeah, the Inuit... Well, Inuit is, like, a big group of them, though, I think.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying it's...
Yeah.
But... well, the funny thing is that China has so many ethnicities, but they really don't care about any because 90% of the country is Han.
Yeah.
And then you talk about, especially,
it's
like,
so
in the
racist.
Northwest.
I mean, like, can you say that's racist or ethnic or something?
It's definitely
it's
like
big
an ethnic struggle
yeah, and
going on within China. But it's just different beliefs and different people, you know, and the government's run by the Han. And it's like, that's like, you know...
Did you ever hear about any tensions between, like, mainland China and Hong Kong?
Did
people talk about that at all?
No, because, like, Hong Kong... The nice thing about Hong Kong for China is that Hong Kong is counted in China's GDP.
Yeah.
So it's funny, you look at China's provinces on a list of,
and
like,
it's still run democratically-ish, but, you know, it's a dictatorship in charge of it.
Yeah.
They elect their people, but then their people have no say in anything.
But you look at, like, Chinese sort of like GDP DC. By province.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, $600, $1,000, you know, average income. Then you have places like, which they count Taiwan.
Yeah.
And they count Hong Kong, and they count that other place where all the gambling is.
I can't
remember what the name of it is right now. But they count all those for their GDP, and it, like, makes their GDP seem so much better because it's, like, the like, average income is, like, $25,000 versus $1,200, you know, in middle China.
Well, I saw like, this really interesting video. This was taken on one of the subway trains in Hong Kong, and it was basically this woman from mainland China and her little girl were opening a packet of ramen, or lo mein, or whatever they'd call it, the dry noodle.
The dry noodles.
On the train, and because they were hungry, they were eating it, and I think they were tourists on, like, a trip just to see Hong Kong, because that's, like, a lot of wealthy people in mainland China go on vacation to Hong Kong, because it's, like, a very nice area, like, compared to a lot of the shitholes in the north. So they're on there, they're eating on the train, and one of the people starts screaming. Like, one of the Hong Kong people starts screaming because they see this person who, I don't know how they can tell normally, but they somehow knew, and maybe she was talking Cantonese. Maybe she was talking Cantonese or something like that, and that's what they talk in Hong Kong, right? Cantonese?
Yeah.
So, and they heard her talking Mandarin, and they're like, you can't eat on the train. You can't do that. This is not... Get the hell off of this train. You can't eat here. And the little girl's like, my mom told me I could do this. And, like, they're screaming at the little girl.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, it's my mom's fault. It's not my fault. And, like, and so they start screaming at the mom. And the little girl's like, it was my mom. And it's funny. Even the little girl started blaming the mom. And she's like, I didn't know. We were hungry. We were on a trip. We were just trying to eat. And they start screaming. And it gets into, like, a physical fight.
What? Physical fight?
Yeah. Like, these women are just screaming at this woman, and, like, then the train police come down at one of the stops, and they come in, and they're like, what's going on here? And then they just start screaming, like, she's eating on the train. And it's like, clearly this isn't an argument about food on the train, because that's stupid. What it's an argument about is that the Hong Kong Chinese people, they do not seem to like, or they think that the mainland ones are condescending. They really do. And they thought that they were sort of flouting.
Well, they probably
the law.
Feel occupied.
They do. And I didn't know this. And I saw
this
video.
Well, they've only been part of China for what? Like 13 years now? 14 years
now? After 100 years of
British
occupation.
It was 1997 was when they made the transition.
And the promise was going to be another 50 years of Hong Kong being its own place. But that didn't happen.
Well, they were totally...
And I didn't realize how bad it was until I saw this video. And then I was like, oh, that's interesting. Let me look up some more. And then I found another video of this woman from Hong Kong who was, like, she was just a regular Hong Kong citizen, but for some reason she was, like, gussied up like Paris Hilton or something on vacation in mainland China and drunk off her ass and screaming about how she's better than everybody else or something like that. And it was all over the Chinese news that this, like, debutante woman was, like, she's just, like, a regular citizen. She wasn't even famous, but she was just drunk on the streets, and because she was Hong Kong, they sort of push this narrative these crazy Hong Kong people coming to our mainland China and getting drunk. It's like,
I think that's a problem across China, because I remember we went on a trip on the Yangtze River and got to see
the Yellow River.
Yeah, we got to see the Three Gorges Dam. It was an awesome trip on this riverboat.
Yeah,
and we got into this city in the Sichuan province called Chongqing. It's really what it's called. I'm not making a joke. And
I didn't think you were. I mean, there are plenty of jokes you can make.
I'm talking to the audience at this point. But if we have an audience, that is.
We don't.
But so we get off the boat, and we're waiting for, like, a bus to come pick us up so we can go to our next destination.
Yeah.
And there are these two people. There's this woman and this man, and they both have clipboards, which I guess it's kind of like, you know, getting people to sign a petition like they do here in, like, the metro. You know, like, will you sign this for Greenpeace or whatever?
But it's more like, can you put your familial stamp on this piece of paper?
Yeah. And this woman and this man are, like, fighting to get people's attentions because everyone's getting off the boat. And the woman turns to the man and hits him on the arm with her clipboard to get him out of the way. And he takes, like, they carry these tea jars, which if you're familiar with tea at all, they're like double walled. So they have an inner jar and an outer glass.
Right, with the hot water on the outside.
Yeah, and the hot water's on the inside jar, so you don't burn your hand when you're holding it.
Yeah.
And this man gets so angry at the woman hitting him with the clipboard, he takes his bottle and he bashes it on her head, and it breaks and shatters, and she's like bleeding all over her face, and he's trying to like really go at her with this, and we're just watching like these people fight. And Chinese cops, we found, were pretty lazy. They don't really care that much. These two guys run up and they're like, oh God, white people, we can't have this happening. And they pull them apart, and this woman's still trying to beat the crap out of the guy with her clipboard. And that's the most violent thing I've ever seen in my whole life.
In summation, it's really a beautiful culture.
It is.
You really have to see it
for
yourself.
Their food, second to none.
Yeah, good food. I pretty much just forgive them for everything else because of that.
Yeah.
But speaking of Asia, Korea, North Korea,
I'm so
to be specific,
glad we can talk about
this. With the new leader, Kim Il Sung, the
No.
I mean,
Kim Il Sung was the first.
I mean,
leader.
Kim Jong Un, Kim Jong Un, the grandson of Kim Il Sung. He launched what the government said was a satellite. I don't know exactly what they said the satellite was for. Probably for like GPS or some other.
I think it was like a weather satellite.
What it really looked like, I mean, clearly looked like, was a long range ballistic missile. I mean, it in no way looked like they were a lot. I mean, because I've seen the rockets that you launch like the,
actual satellites
on, and they have like a much longer like thrust, and like you can just tell that they're trying to break atmosphere. And this thing was not trying to do that. They were just trying to see how far it would launch. And instead of actually doing anything, it made it like halfway somewhere, and then just
it
fell apart.
It didn't even make it past the first stage.
Yeah, it fell apart. It just, like, crumbled in the atmosphere, and then fell into the Sea of Japan or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah.
And it's funny, because this is probably the first time in my lifetime, and I don't know, in, like, maybe the complete, like, 60, 70 years of North Korea, maybe the first time they've ever said it was a failure. They claim it was still... They still claim that it was a satellite that was trying to reach orbit. But they admitted that it didn't work, and I don't think I've ever seen their state TV admit to a failure.
I was shocked when I heard that they actually admitted it was a failure, because, you know, when Kim Jong-il tried launching a rocket, you know, and it blew up in midair, Kim Jong-il was like, great success, you know, we won.
It was, you know...
We showed them, the West...
We really shot guy in the eye, God in the eye with that one, right? And that, I feel like that's what he said in Korean.
Kim Jong, have you ever seen the website Kim Jong Il looking at things? I think it's a Tumblr.
Oh yeah, it's a Tumblr.
Oh my God,
that, which is him staring at shit. I mean,
it's one of the funniest things ever. It's just him looking at different products in
yeah,
North
like
Korea.
His government will show him around to things, and he'll be like, "Oh yeah, this is."
And he has the same like tracksuit.
He's also
and
he
the
was,
glasses.
He was also like a really big fan of Hollywood, to the point where like he would have like. I think Roman Polanski visited him one time.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He would have famous directors come and visit. I mean, what the hell has Roman Polanski got to do besides visit, like, dictators in random countries?
Like, why not, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, but
I mean, if you get a chance to go inside North Korea because Kim Jong-il
but he,
says you should,
he,
like, why the hell not?
He's directed his own movies, too, and things like he was completely insane. And his son looks like him...
But
combined
fatter.
With like
it's
combined
like...
with Uncle Fester or something. I don't know. It's very he looks like a mess of a child.
He doesn't
and
look like a military dictator
he,
in
he
any
went,
form.
He went to school in like Sweden or something under like a fake name, something like that.
I know he went to school in the West. I don't know. I didn't know where.
But yeah, he went some Western European school he went to under like an assumed name to so that nobody
tried
to kill him while he was there. So
I'm sure no one at school was like, you know, you look like a lot like Kim Jong-il.
So obviously,
Have you ever seen that guy?
Like Kim Jong Il had no problem with educating his son in the West with Western culture. Although I don't
he wanted his son to be intelligent, and I think that's him being a father, right?
So and like yeah, and Kim Jong Il never really did a whole lot of public speaking. You'd get a lot of pictures of him, but he didn't like to talk. Now his son, just today on the anniversary of Kim Il Sung's 100th birthday, even though he's been dead for like 20, 30 years or something like that, Kim Jong Il was only 17-year rule or something. I don't know.
No, he ruled for a long time.
Did he? Oh, okay.
Because he died in the 90s.
So yeah, so they're celebrating this, and like Kim Jong-un actually gave, like, a pretty long speech about, like, just the country in general. It was really weird. It wasn't eloquent or anything. He was reading from, like, some paper that was probably approved by, like, the state. Like, I don't think he's writing his own speeches, but it was just weird to hear him speak because I can't recall Kim Jong-il ever speaking. I really can't.
Well, another interesting thing is they actually let a select few of the Western press into the country to see the satellite before it launched.
I saw, like, Fox News there, and I saw, like, NBC there, and, like, a few other people, and they're all in this one area, though, because everybody had the same shot of, like, the river looking at the Capitol, and I was like, I'm pretty sure they won't let anybody closer than that.
I mean, honestly, though, you think about what North Korea has been like since Kim Il-sung took over and since the North was separated after the war, and you think, like, this is progress. Yeah, it's really minuscule progress, but the fact they've admitted a failure, they're letting foreign press in, they're not letting
anything. I think it's actually
anything.
Dangerous. I think it's the opposite of progress.
Why?
Because what I see happening is that the way that I see it right now is that, and this is for the past, like, 60, 70 years, they've made promises. We reward them for those promises because they're like, oh, those are great promises you made. And then they always break them. And we consistently reward them for broken promises. And it's absurd because no other country gets this kind of leeway from America.
Well, hold on. I think Iran's getting a lot of leeway.
I don't think they are because I don't think Iran's doing shit. That's what I believe. I think Iran might have funded terrorists.
Well, what about during the protests and they were killing people?
They were, but they weren't doing anything worse than Syria, and we didn't do anything for them either. Like, I think we're giving a pass on a lot of these dictatorships that we can't really do a whole lot about anyway.
Well, I don't think we should get involved, honestly.
There are a lot of these countries, Syria, Iran, and North Korea, they have very big standing armies. Now, Iran and Syria, we could probably take. But North Korea has, like, the fourth biggest standing army in the world.
Yeah, the problem is they're all armed with, like, North Korean-made weapons.
Yeah, I mean, they're idiots. We would run them over. But guess what? Do you really want America to basically murder about a million people to get North Korea to do what they want?
Well,
that sounds terrible.
Every once in a while, I pose this question to someone when we're talking about North Korea, and that's like, let's say
we would have to kill so many North Koreans.
Well, hold on. Let's say that North Korea fell yesterday, and today we went in with, you know, let's say China went in and tried. China wouldn't do shit. They don't care.
They'd secure their borders, and that would be it.
But, like, let's say, like, South Korea crossed the DMZ and wanted to help the people of North Korea. Would any of them believe what the South Koreans had to say?
I think
that there's a word out. Like, my question is, like, wouldn't they just believe what they've been told the past 50 years?
Well, there was that recent story, and I think it was made into a book. We don't have time to get into it right now.
Yeah.
But it was this guy who escaped from North Korea. And he told the story to this reporter who then, I think, wrote the book about it.
That was, like, the aquariums of Pyongyang or something like that?
Yeah, he was in a prison camp or something like that. And he turned in all of his parents without any remorse. He turned in his whole family, like his sisters and their daughters and everything. He turned everybody in his family in for trying to basically escape. And then no matter what, because all families of political dissidents are put in jail in North Korea.
He was put in jail,
even though he turned them in. Then he finally escaped. He had no remorse about this at all. And then,
well, that's kind of a dick move.
When he was in South Korea, he slowly was like, shit, these people have all this remorse and they have all these emotions. I'm a huge asshole. I didn't realize what I did.
Well,
and he's like, now he's living with it. But he seems like, he's almost like a manufactured sociopath, because if you hear him speak, he talks without emotion. He's like, what I did, it was, I mean, I think he had to, like, turn his emotions off to just live with what he did.
When you talk to South Koreans about North Korea, they're sad. They're sad about being separated from what is essentially their people on the north side of the DMZ.
It's a sad situation.
And
I mean, I'm not a fan of it at all. And
I mean, honestly, we could talk about this and all the things related to it, you know, for the remainder of the night, but you know, we're running out of time here.
Yeah, it's true. We are.
So, you know, I can't. I don't.
This
think
has really should... been. This has really been a storm of civility.
I think we've gotten along extremely well.
Our producer Tommy gives it his mushroom stamp of approval, I believe.
Yeah, and I also want to thank Tommy for being very consistent with the beer refilling.
That's true. I didn't even have to ask. I just had beer.
He just saw that our beers were empty. He's like a waiter. I think he's done this job before.
Yeah, maybe. So we were drinking during the show.
Yeah, we've been drinking beer. I think I've drank more than everybody else. Yeah, Tommy says, yeah.
Keystone or something.
Newcastle. Newcastle yeah. Brown, which is good. It is one of the mini kegs. I approve.
Better than Heineken, definitely.
Oh, God, Heineken's awful. I don't know how Heineken drink that stuff. But, I mean, I'd say that we should probably come up with topics to talk about the next show, but we don't really know what's going to happen in the news.
You guys should vote on those topics if we had some way to implement that, but we don't, so we'll just pick them.
We'll just make up topics.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, what topics did we have? We had North Korea, and we had Mitt Romney and women.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to talk about gun laws, yeah.
Yeah, so we had those topics.
All right. And, so, I mean, just... This is the Civil Storm podcast. Thunderous applause. I mean, that's what.
Can we get some sound effects?
We're gonna be on iTunes, and just, you know, vote for us if you like us, so that other people can find us and then vote for us and make some
vicious cycle of voting. Hoping that this takes off.
I don't even believe in the process of democracy, but I believe that you can vote to make us the best.
Well, I believe in the republic.
Well, whatever.
We're not really a democracy. But, you know, the people who nitpick about that, that's just dicks.
It's true. You know?
We're not a real democracy. Yeah. We're a republic.
Why don't you go graduate from the Electoral
College? Oh, God. Oh. Why don't you graduate from the Electoral College?
Hey.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. This is Patrick.
This is Brandon.
And,
Zip great cunt. I don't know. That was what they say on Adam Carolla.
All right. Well, it was good being civil.
Yeah.
Peace.